Hello and welcome back to Millennial for the final stream on this. I think it's the fourth night. I'm beginning to lose count. And I'm now here with Henrik from Red Ice. I don't think Henrik needs any introduction, but I'm sure he's famous to everyone watching this. But it's the first time since 2019 since Henrik appeared. For various logistical issues each year, it's just not been possible. But I'm really glad to have him back on. So welcome, Henrik.
Thank you. Good to be here. Happy Lucia Day as well today, 13th.
Ah, right.
You don't have that in the UK, do you? Any version of that, Lucia?
No.
No.
As far as I know.
Completely Nordic thing. But we took an Italian saint, so we got that going for us, I guess. Saint Lucia. No,
yeah, I know. I think it is. I've only heard of it in Sweden. So that's it's not something that is done in Britain. It's funny how there are still, maybe only among our kind, that there are these things that are still specific to each nation. I mean, yeah. Like Bonfire Night in Britain, for example. It's quite sweet. It's quite nice.
I like it.
Nice that this stuff still exists, even in this godforsaken age.
Exactly. Keep that alive, you know?
Absolutely. The first thing I should say is Lana isn't here this evening, but she's busy with other things. And that brings me to saying that Henrik and Lana recently welcomed their third child into the world. So that is a daughter called Sigrid.
That's so right.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Very, very happy about it. She came a little bit early, but you know that's how these things go. I actually do have a. Do you want me to show a photo? I actually do have a picture here. We got full screen here for you. There you go. Here's my boys with little one here.
Oh, that's lovely. Hold on a second.
Yeah, do that full screen. Now we're very happy. Everything went well, and very glad to have her here. And a couple of weeks earlier, kind of than expected, but everything's been going very well. So we're super happy. She's doing very well, advancing as well. She was in the hospital for about 2 weeks or so. She is very little. She's tiny, but she'll grow. You know, so it's all good. we're happy to have her.
Oh, that's lovely, lovely. Yeah, there's. I think the last time we spoke, you'd just had your second son. So it's, if I recall correctly, 2019. I'm pretty sure you had. It's lovely to see this this family developing. I mean, one of the things is that in our movement, it's nice to have people who set a good example and do something traditional. Because in our age, there are so many obstacles, psychological, cultural, financial, especially now, to doing what is the standard, or used to be the standard thing to do and have a family.
Oh, I know.
It's quite incredible, really.
Even, don't have to go into details, but just like even the hospital experience, everything around that, and it's just like, it feels like it's just designed to make it as difficult and stressful as possible. You know what I mean? And it's like at every step. But you say then it's like the financial thing, and the at least in this country, you know, the US where I'm at currently, the NICU. I mean, it's absurd. It's like you'd think a serious civilization would be like, all right, what do we need to do? You know, clean the roads, you know, or keep things fairly clean, secure, safe, of course. But then like ensure that we can like continue our civilization and have kids and encourage that and making that as easy and as cheap and affordable as possible. But, you know, we're not in those times.
No, absolutely not. It's a very perverse age that we're in. And that has always been a thing with the interactions that we've had have always been about that sort of matter. But it's the interesting thing is that since the last time that you were on Millennial, 2019, all of that has taken on a new, quite a radical new face. We used to speak about the Great Replacement. We used to speak about Islamic migration and into Europe and changing Europe. We used to speak about the Hispanics in America. That's the sort of alt-right era. sort of bread and butter of the alt-right. And also, there was also concern about degeneracy, LGBT, which is still very much with us. All of the drag queen story hour, I don't think, was quite a thing in 2019.
And not as it is now. It's just taken off like crazy. It's like the pedos, pedo agenda is right in the open right now. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and of course, Pizzagate was in 2016. And I don't know what you think about that, but it seems to be...
Most of it is true, I mean, to be honest.
Exactly. It's kind of like certain other things where if it's not true, it might as well be true.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's indicative. But the new phase of all of this is the Great Reset and COVID. Now, some people have said on Millennial this year that is kind of winding down now. It's over. COVID as a pandemic, as an emergency, is over. And it clearly is. I mean, even the governments are saying that. What would you say? I mean, this is a massive question. What the hell happened? I mean, in your perspective, what was going on? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, Zionist neocon kind of stuff. It seems like a very different type of elite that implemented COVID. What would you say to that?
I think there is an overlap, actually, on one level. I'm thinking back to shows we did back in 2006, 7, 8, and stuff like that. And we had guests on that talked about, like, the tyrannical nature of, like, the World Health Organization. And they weren't on display that much. Even the World Economic Forum has, like, really become a public, you know, a face forward of, like, at least an agenda during the COVID pandemic. And I mean, they were there before, but they weren't that, like, in your face. They weren't that open about it. They weren't that, like, as the public spokes organization for, you know, what they wanted us to do. So you have kind of some new players in a way. Again, they've been there, but they've become more prominent. But the World Health Organization stuff, I know there's tons of people out there, and, you know, this is the conspiracy field, but a lot of people have warned about this and said, like, they'll use diseases, they'll use pandemics to take more control. They use it to, you know, implement certain things. And I mean, most of those people, as usual, here's yet another conspiracy theory that turns out to be true. I don't think anybody could have guessed exactly what they would use, or, you know, in this case, essentially, if you ask me personally, like a flu that they launch that they say is something which it is not, and then they launch a vaccine campaign, and then actually we're starting to see people getting seriously sick from it. So it was pretty clever, to be honest, if you ask me. But I think there is an overlap in the sense that the people that want to put us under their thumb and get the control that they now not 100% have in place, but I mean, a lot of things have happened since the pandemic, a lot of things that people would never agree to before, they actually did during this. And there is an overlap in the sense that ultimately it's about control, right? It's not about a specific political system. It's not about certain, you know, it's capitalism, or it's communism, or it's, you know, this or that, you know, ideology that needs to be in place. Most of it, if you ask me, is essentially about control, controlling the population, making sure that we comply and we do what they want us to do. And at the end of the day, if it happens to be a little bit more that capitalism is being used as a mechanism to control us, then so be it. If it's more socialism, that's what it is. In this case, it's like the whole healthcare racket, essentially, like going that route and saying it's a dangerous disease and therefore we have to take control of society. We have to reshuffle everything. And COVID might be, you know, more or less over. You never know. They could wheel out new strains or something like that. But they are talking about a second pandemic. I mean, Gates talks about that. You hear it by all the same usual suspect. They say basically, like, when the second pandemic hits, we now want to have all these organizations in place. We want to have the vaccine roll out much quicker and all that stuff. So I think it's a weapon that's far too, what's the word? Far too illustrious, far too too easy, I guess, for the elites to grab at and just say, here's a perfect excuse. So I don't think that's over. I think we'll see new versions of that in some capacity.
Oh, yeah. Then this is why it always annoyed me when certain people would say COVID is over. So you conspiratards need to just give it up now. It's over. Well, yeah, it's over as like this thing is over, this particular emergency is over, but it has had long lasting effects, I think. And right. I don't think this is the world of 2019 anymore.
No.
It feels still now, I mean, it's nearly a year now since Omicron, and it still feels like we're definitely not back to normal. I mean, I wouldn't think of casually traveling across Europe in the way that we used to, you know. It just doesn't seem like that culture anymore. You and I met in Sweden, in Stockholm.
Yep.
And we met prior to that in DC. Mm-hmm. That feels like a completely different way. Now, I could technically afford to do that if I want, like right now, I could book a flight to Stockholm. But it just doesn't feel like appropriate. It doesn't feel like, I haven't been abroad in early 2020.
Yeah.
There was a conference in Lithuania.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I didn't know what was just immediately around, like a month away at that point. And that was the last time I was abroad. It just doesn't feel like that age is back yet, or is ever going to come back. And of course, that brings us to the matter of the Ukraine war. And you and I talked about this about a month ago when I appeared on Red Ice. But that's a new sort of a new chapter yet in it. And there's a lot to be said about it. But it just feels I agree with you that I think one way or another, what seems to have happened here is the status quo has been fortified. In the same way that democracy was fortified in America in late 2020, you're fortifying the thing, but that sort of transforms the thing itself into something else. So we've got, okay, it's consumerism, it's social welfare, it's democracy, but it's now fortified. And so life is just not the same.
No, I think that's the plan. And the way I've been looking at it, and as I've been learning more about this stuff, it looks to me that COVID was a perfect excuse. And I'm not saying that this is the reason why what happened did happen or that all of that was planned. But to me, anyway, looking at various, you know, trends or whatever you want to call it, from economics to demographics to natural, like, sure, kind of faults within the system that was already had cracks in the facade that's already been there. COVID, in my view, acted as a perfect, like, kind of nail in the coffin in a sense, and something that everybody could point to and say, well, it's because of COVID kind of thing. But if you look at like certain countries' demographics, you know, like the US, you had the boomers are starting to retire. You have less people coming up from underneath. In other words, that means that the consumer-based economic system already is in massive trouble, essentially, right? And COVID will act also as this perfect excuse of saying, well, you know, because otherwise it's like the elite would be like, well, if things are now in decline or like the economy is not doing well anymore, there are shortages happening, there's all kinds of problem. Take that into account that China is also having a massive demographic problem, right, through the one-child policy. And they're not going to be able to maintain as the factory of the world anymore. You know what I mean? And it's not going to happen tomorrow, but within, I don't know, 10 years, maybe sooner, maybe 20, you're going to see a completely different China where they might be losing more than half of their population, you know, like drastic. So the whole of West have exported all their manufacturing over to China and stuff like that. All of those things were like already problems that were building and building and building. But instead of having an elite and establishment that said, okay, how do we tackle this? If we want to continue to have it, and I'm not saying that that's the way to go either, but if you want to continue having a consumer-based, monetary system, a capitalist system that just basically needs to have more people all the time, you should have tackled that like 30 years ago and encouraged birth rates naturally. They've tried to make up for it with immigration, and they've used that as an excuse as well, even to replace us and stuff like that. But the point is, none of these things have worked, and it was like it's a mechanism of destruction, or not destruction maybe, but dismantlement inside of the system that has been there. The trends have been there for decades. Like, we know where this is going. But instead of dealing with that, they've just said, let's just keep things going as long as possible. More debt, just print more money, you know, kind of thing. And then COVID rolls around. And because we're seeing shortages out there, food shortages, supply chain issues, all these kinds of things, they can just point to COVID and say, see, it was because of the lockdowns. And we didn't really have any choice, that we had to do those things. So the whole Great Reset thing, if you can, at least if you ask me, if you can sum it up, at least in the short term, it would be like scarcity. That's one thing that, like, I see that they want. They want less for us, which of course means more for them, for the elites, right? We are supposed to live in a pod. We are not supposed to travel. We're supposed to put on the headset, you know, consume less, eat less meat, you know, don't travel, don't have your personal car and all that kind of things, right? So instead of them saying, well, we planned this for you, this is how we wanted it anyway, they can just say, oh, it's COVID's fault. And then when Russia-Ukraine war rolls around, they go, well, that's Putin's fault. You know, the reason we can't turn on the lights and heat our homes anymore, it's Putin's issue, right? He's the problem. So you've had one thing after another of these perfect excuses and puzzle pieces of the Great Reset plan that's you know, fit into place over the last, yeah, starting really end of 2019 and really going into effect in 2020. And I think it was always going to happen in one way or another, but now they accelerated that because of the COVID and the insane policies that they did. And again, demographically, we don't even know where we're going to be in 5 years from now. You know, people are talking about the vaccine as a massive, you know, depopulation campaign, and that's possible. It's too early to tell. I mean, we're certainly seeing a lot of ill people and sicknesses and strange effects, and I mean, birth defects, and you know, I think a lot of people out there are kind of keeping up with this, just how insane that is. The point is, I think we're going to be in a radically different situation just 5 years from now, and we're not going to recognize much of it. It's going to be a very bumpy road, I think, to be honest. And I think we have to prepare accordingly. I don't think that nothing that we're used to, or you know, the little portion, I'll say this real quick at the end. The little time that we had of so-called globalization, you know, that some people at least point is, oh, there's wonderful, you know, materialism and all these wonderful things. And of course, that's been the ruin of us. It's been the ruin of our civilization, of our countries, of our nations, of our culture, demographically. So when I look at that, and they pointed that as a golden age, the elites and some of the economists and stuff like that, that was the best time, right? You had like China being the cheap factory of the world. You had after the fall of the Soviet Union, you had tons of like commodities dumped on the market, you know, tons of resources in Russia, or this in that case, the Soviet Union. So you had like this perfect storm of creating those conditions. But all that as of 2020 is over, and it was going to be over anyway because of the trends and the trajectories of the economy, of demographics and all those things. But now, instead of having someone we can point to and say, these people are responsible for creating this, now it's, to most people anyway, it's just this external circumstance that no one really thought about or could have predicted in any kind of capacity that they can point to, and thereby legitimizing themselves. We try to help you from all of these things. We try to save you. We try to make things better for you. We're not the villains. We're the good guys, you know? But hopefully everybody's not going to, you know, buy that. Hopefully there's more and more people that actually question that. And realize that this is what they wanted for us all along, you know.
Yeah, and the next thing, of course, is climate change, because I remember, maybe we've talked about this before, I can't remember now. I remember observing the climate change thing developing in the mid 2000s, and it peaked in 2007. Stopped when the 2008, and stopped when the global financial crisis hit, because nobody had the luxury to care about that kind of thing then.
Yeah,
and then it disappeared for about 2-3 years. Gradually started coming back. By the end, like 10 years later, you had Greta Thunberg, and that kind of thing, and it's never gone away. Even during COVID, it's been maintained as this background narrative, this thing that's literally heating up all the time.
Yeah.
So we've got to deal with it eventually. We've got to put things in place to deal with this. And I certainly agree with you that public health and the virus was a brilliant way, extremely effective way to frighten people into submission.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just, I did a Telegram post analyzing how useful the virus was to them, because it was so malleable. It was so versatile. They could just do whatever they wanted. Like, if they wanted more public fear, then they could do more PCR tests, which would get more false positives, which meant more cases, which meant, okay, the virus is really back. Or if they wanted the opposite, they could just do fewer PCR tests.
They did that as a business. You know, they eased off, and then, you know, less red and black on the big map, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Absolutely. And there were other tricks as well that I can't even remember now. But the point is, it was an extremely useful thing. And of course, it terrified some people. And other people, it was just like, okay, whatever, I've got to go along with this. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So public health was a great way to keep the public under control, because the public value their health, especially if they value nothing else. They don't value their race. They don't value religion. They don't value their nation. Then at least they do value their health. But climate change is going to be even more so, I think, because, or it could potentially be, because it gives people something outside of themselves to care about and devote themselves to. Whereas, so it's not selfish anymore. It's not just like the animal survival. It's religious. It's, I can be a good person by caring about this. And you got a bit of that with COVID, because you could care about everyone else. So that's why you get vaccinated. That's why you wear the mask, right, and whatever.
Yeah.
But with climate change, it's the whole planet.
It's the Earth's health, right? That's what there is, in a way. If you don't do what we tell you, then you don't care about the Earth, and you basically want that everyone. It always boils down into these like cartoonish, childish, you know, categories. You know, if you're not for this, you're against this, and it's very like, well, you don't want everybody to die, do you? You can't be against that, you know. I mean, what's sad to see, though, is just quickly, I agree with you with the whole climate change thing or global warming thing. Seamlessly, almost, they've weaved into each other. And the same thing you applied during COVID, you can now apply on a larger scale for, you know, to combat, you know, global warming or climate change, or to, you know, sucking carbon out of the atmosphere or something crazy like that. But it was very sad to see. Now, I'm not saying there were resistance, but did the resistance really lead to something? Overall, we saw a massive compliance on this, right? And the majority of people still, they got afraid. And even people that I normally would have thought would see through this, when they really turn up the heat on this thing, a lot of people that were just like, no, this is it. You know, we have to do what they say. This is nothing about, this isn't political. There's no agenda here. This is serious business. And we basically just have to comply and do what they tell us. And I was like shocked at that. I was like, really? Is this, there's no opposition here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, people were, there were two fears going on at once. There was the fear of the virus, but then there was also the fear of rebelling. You know, so I can understand when it came to it, a lot of people just thought, right, well, I'm not going to be a pariah. I'm not going to be an outsider. I'm not going to be a rebel. I'm not going to be a criminal. So I'll just pretend to believe in all of this. And at any rate, I'll go along with it.
Yeah. It's crazy, you know. I knew that these were things that could happen, but I just, it caught me by surprise, and it happened so quickly. And so, you know, all of a sudden it was just upon us. And it was like, well, that's it, isn't there? There's no going back to normal at all now in any capacity. You know what I mean? And as you said, next it will be, now it's the energy shortages. We're going to be able to heat our houses in Europe. What's going to happen with, I mean, what's strange with it too, though, is like they want this green transition that they talk about. They want, like, you know, renewables, and they will all these fancy new things to buy, just magically be in place and make up for what oil and gas and these kinds of things are now not being able to provide for various reasons. But you're not going to even be able to pull off the green transition by, you have to have oil and gas and these old style of energies in place, even to just like manufacture and produce the very things that are supposed to, you know, make up for the loss in energy. And none of that has happened. And that's why, to me, it almost feels like they're designing us to just hit the wall entirely, or like the collapse of civilization, essentially. And, you know, Europe, they're talking about the heating issue, and it's like, even this year, this winter now, 2022, and going into 2023, is not as bad, apparently, because they did manage to buy up a lot of liquefied natural gas, other gas deposits from other countries, and they've stored up. That's what I've heard, anyway. They've stored up, so they have enough. 2023, that winter going into 2024, that's when the real challenges are going to begin. And after the Nord Stream blew up, right, Europe is going to become one of the biggest customers of America, of the LNG, liquefied natural gas. But again, all of that infrastructure is not even in place yet. It's going to take, people are talking about 2026, maybe 2027, before that's in place. So what we're going to do in the short term, I have no idea. I mean, I'm seeing articles about how people in Germany, for example, they're going out and chopping wood just to like be able to heat their homes. And lucky for those that actually have a wood stove that they still can, you know, implement that as an option. Most people don't. Living in a modern way, that you know, all of that is gone. We're radiators, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I heard about some scheme that I've forgotten where it was. It was in Germany, and the government, local government, was looking for ways to keep a record of how much people used in terms of wood or how much they cut down. I can't remember what it was exactly now. The point is, they know what people are going to do. It's obvious. People are going, especially in the Black Forest or something.
Yeah.
Lots of wood around. So people are going to do that. So they were thinking, okay, we're going to have to keep tabs on that and keep control of that. I mean, and another aspect with regard to Germany is the closing of the nuclear power plants, which I guess was, I mean, if Fukushima was, I think it was 2012. Let me just see when that happened.
2014? 2014. No, you're right. No, you're right.
It's 2011.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a really dorky reason that I actually know this. It's because Kraftwerk did a special concert in 2012 about radioactivity. So I knew 2012 was in my head, but it was 2011.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, and then in response to that, Germany shut down, I think, most of its nuclear power plants. And yeah. I didn't know this, but it takes many years to build a nuclear power station. And actually, someone told me it was like 10 years at least to build one, and even quite a few years to start one up again that already exists. Once you've shut it down, it takes, because you've got to test every single component has to be meticulously gone through before you can actually start the thing up. So basically, Germany completely castrated itself.
Yep, and then becoming dependent on Russian gas, right, is the only mechanism. In other words, then you had one linchpin, right, or one, you hinge everything on that one item. And then, of course, what happens? Nord Stream explodes, right? And it's like, whoops. It's that whole thing is just so absurd in terms of like who actually benefits from that, and to suggest that like Russia did that to itself. And I mean, it's like the one leverage that existed, right? It's a one thing that you're like, oh well, but Europe might come to their senses, and they might like, you know what, it's not worth it siding with NATO or siding with America. They look over towards Russia. And it's not like, oh, we should have just done that. It's not that easy either. But I'm saying at least Europe had that, you know, option at that point, that as a variable, and saying, you know what, it looks pretty good, you know, having better relationship with Russia, cheaper gas, being able to heat our homes, right? But instead, it was obliterated, that option, and now there's no choice, and now Europe has gone all in on American LNG kind of thing. But short term, you know, as you say, like I think 17 nuclear power plants Merkel decided to decommission, or maybe it was 11 of 17, but regardless, the majority of it, which is just totally insane. So they went along with the Greens, you know, requirement of like nuclear energy is bad. And of course, you could argue about that, but in absence of anything else, you know what I mean, or no option, it's one of the few good options that we do have. It's just a fact, you know. So they
the
agenda, and then basically they bowed to the agenda of joining like Ukraine instead. And you've had these lunatic German politicians that are basically talking about how, you know, our obligation is not to the German people, but it's to the Ukrainians. You know, I mean, that's what we have to, you know, we have to stand up for them. And it's like this hardcore ultra-nationalism, which, again, I don't have a problem with. But in this case, if you can't have it for your own nation, but you're supposed to have it for another, that's when it comes, you know, absurd and just ridiculous, you know.
Well, absolutely. And you would hope that that woman's, it was a female politician, I remember, who said that she said something, and of course it could get lost in translation, but it was something like she doesn't, her priority is with the Ukrainian people, regardless of what her German voters think and want. Now, I mean, she absolutely should get voted out at the first opportunity. And this actually gets to a key thing here. I wonder what the absence or what the loss of comfort is going to do to people.
Yeah.
Because all of this that's happened, mass immigration, LGBT, feminism, all of it has happened amidst luxury and constantly rising luxury, you could say.
Yeah, materialistic comfort, right?
Yeah. When I say luxury, that's what I mean. I mean, it's more complicated than that. Spending power has gone down, the property ladder and all that. But compared to 50 years ago, our lives are more materially comfortable. There is luxury. There's, of course, an abundance, an unimaginable abundance of media and things to distract yourself with compared to 50 years ago.
And I don't want to cut you off, so remember where we were, but isn't that the bribe, if you will, for...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, that was the bribe for us to go along with all the bullshit around us. And basically, individually, absolutely, you can flee into now, just turn on Netflix, free pornography, like all these crazy
absolutely
things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I remember seeing a thing that, you know, it was like a meme infographic thing, and it said, you know, you can afford a smartphone, and everyone can afford a smartphone, but you can't get on the property ladder. You can't buy your own house. Well, your grandfather couldn't have conceived of a smartphone and the abundance of treats that it gives you, but he could get on the property ladder.
Yeah, that's right.
He could have a fucking house.
Yeah.
He could have a place in the world that was unequivocally his, where he was free, where he wasn't living under the mercy of a landlord or the government or an authority.
Yeah.
It was his place in the world. For a lot of people now, I think that concept is alien, unimaginable. The idea that you, and of course it kind of is because of land tax and property tax, the government are now your landlord in a sense. It's a thing in itself. But
They don't want us to have that. Again, that's all of this Agenda 2030, UN Sustainable Development Goals. It's about driving people off of the land into big mega cities. And while they're pushing this like earth, it's a kind of an earth worship, but it's also this detached way to nature.
Yeah, it's like a scientistic
earth. It's a museum. It's a glass wall. Look, nature. We're taking care of it. But then you're like in a sector in some mega metropolis somewhere. Where you can't even get access to that land or be part of that nature. You're like an outside force. And we can't have a footprint, whether it's a carbon or an actual physical footprint. We just, you know, make no marks on the earth, no nothing. It was like, you know, now we're living a whole life, where they want us to be, living an entire life without even ever making a mark on the earth, right? It's like we never existed at all. Like we're a ghost. You know what I mean? If you compare it to how it used to be, people chop down trees, they build a home, they made things with their hand, physical things that were still there at least. They might not have stood forever, but they were there after you were gone. You know what I mean? And now it's this weird ghostly existence where it's like we're not even supposed to you know, be noticed that we were there.
It's almost like a virtuous life is one in which you make no mark on the world whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's just kind of the polar opposite. And that goes along with what I've said about COVID, that it removed people's sense of agency, removed their sense that they could have a life and a life plan, things that they're thinking about for the future. I think it did have that effect. And so that marries up with what you've just said there, this idea of a life being, well, like a ghost in the world.
Yeah.
It's very grim indeed. I've forgotten where I was going with that thing about you can't get on the, so you've got the smartphone, but you can't get on the property ladder. That seems to be, this has been exacerbated by all of these things with COVID and now climate change. Yeah. That's where I was going. It was the thing about comfort and luxury. So all of this that's happened, yeah, you can't get on the property ladder, but you've got the smartphone, you've got the material abundance, material luxury. Well, what happens when the material luxury goes away?
Yes.
And yeah. this is the point I was getting to, because this is a huge question for me. And I think this is absolutely critical, because can you, basically, to put it in a nutshell, can you have the public believing in woke politics, woke ideology and whatever, when they're freezing?
Right.
And it might actually be, and this is something, sorry to black pill people, but it might actually be that it's even easier to get them to believe in that stuff because they're suffering. I can imagine people getting into an extremely submissive way of being. There's that thing of that if you want to break someone down, you make them suffer. You inflict suffering upon them, and then they will put up with anything. They'll actually become sort of slavish towards you. It's a cliche of the 20th century. Winston with O'Brien, and O'Brien tortures him, and Winston becomes putty in his hands. I wonder if it's going to go that way, or more, are people going to react differently than an individual might? You know, a collective might react differently to oppression, and they might think,
we're about to find out, aren't we? It's a make it or break it point here, I think, to be honest. And I think you'll always have a small faction that they're going to go, and do their own thing anyway. They're going to, whether that's creating parallel structures or setting something up that actually works. And personally, I think that's the way to go. I don't think anybody, this system can't be reformed. The mutants running it right now and the people backing that up are just, it's too far gone. It's too crazy. I think we just have to basically do something ourselves, something that will work. Again, I think we're being also designed out of that system anyway. And it might not be a system of, artificial intelligence and automation and robots and, CBDCs or, all these things. We might not even get to that point. Maybe that's just not that I view it as a carrot, but maybe for some people they're like, ooh, nerds out there are like, this is the cool future we're all going to have one day. But that might actually never come. And it was never intended to come. It was, we're going to live more in a 1984 type of dystopia as opposed to a Brave New World one. But if it does come, then it's definitely going to be by compliance, right? If you look at from ESGs to the social credit score to all these other programs and ideas that's out there right now, if you have any kind of rebellious nature in you, if you have any kind of, going opposition against this or dissident, I guess, you are not, either you will be broken down and in a state of compliance, or you will not be part of that system at all. And I think that's kind of the binary option that at some point is going to come. And so the sooner the better, I think, of creating structures and things outside of all of that, so while we at least have the capacity to take advantage of the supply chains that currently is there. We can't do everything from scratch. We still are depending on getting the tools that we need to do other things. You know what I mean? So I think it's a critical moment right now. The next maybe... no one can say, of course, but the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully have more time, but we might have less. I'm not sure. But we need to form communities, and we need to get together with people. We need to be able to seek each other out, go to areas where you know that there's people that think like you, make those bonds and connections right now, because you can be a millionaire and you can build your doomsday bunkers to survive, this period that's coming and all that stuff. But if you do not have people with you and on your side that you can work together, it doesn't matter how much money you have. It's like, you're not going to make it. So I think knowing people and having, and I don't mean friends just like in the sense of, look at how many friends I have, but like you have good relationships with a number of people that you can depend on, they can depend on you. That's going to be, it's going to be worth more than anything you can imagine today, money or anything like that. And isn't that a good thing at the end of the day? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? aren't we supposed to get back to something like that, something authentic, something more grounded in reality, as opposed to the allure of this new futuristic system that they, you know, are allegedly planning for us or setting up for us? I think it's a blessing in disguise. I think the turmoil and the chaos that they're kind of designing into the system right now could be a liberating factor, if you know what I mean.
Sorry, yeah, I think I do know what you mean. As we said at the beginning, the luxury and the decadence of the 2010s, and obviously prior to that as well, was corrupting. It wasn't, I mean, I remember lamenting this kind of thing, perhaps without quite realizing it, but lamenting that life had become meaningless for so many people because there isn't really anything to do. There isn't anything to fight for. And there is just endless bullshit to distract yourselves with. So that's what most people do. And increasingly, and with the automation and all that happen all the more. So yeah, I agree with you that this could be a return to something authentic and real and really meaningful, because it's actual survival. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing, isn't it? It's that survival used to be difficult, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And we haven't known that experience for generations, really. I mean, I don't know how many generations you could go back, quite a lot. I mean, there is the danger of LARPing, you know, because I know if I got a cut and there was no antiseptic and I lose my arm, I would rather have had the antiseptic, you know. It's there is this danger of falling into delusion. It's like the libertarian who says, yeah, I want a world without any state, and then he ends up in, you know, Mad Max, and it's not actually that fun. So I think we do need to be realistic about this. But as you say, the best way to protect yourself against this is to have like-minded people around you who are reliable. I think the reliability thing is even more important than being ideologically completely in agreement with each other.
Absolutely.
They need to be sane, reliable, sensible people, which is rare enough, to be honest.
It is. I mean, again, it's true. We've had all these generations now over the last, it was early 1900s, late 1800s. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe you can make a case a little bit later than that. But regardless, where every mutation, so to speak, has survived, right? Our success is our downfall, ironically, right? We've been so successful materialistically. The knowledge we had, all the things we could do to, you know, make sure more people, you know, keep more people alive and even keep them alive longer and things like that. And some of that, but like overall compared to the prior generations, it's been like no natural selection process, if you will, or selection cycle, or whatever you want to call it, right? Or pressure, I guess is a better term, selection pressure. Essentially, all of that has been removed, and so you've had all kinds of crazy, crazy versions that I think nature and we are testing out, if you will. And look at it now. I mean, it's like the this goes back, I think, to the LGBTQ stuff and the pedo stuff and the transsexual thing that's happening. It's like a insanity virus just struck, and sure, some of it is driven in the media and some of it is kind of consensus and not everyone agrees with this, but there's still a large segment out there of just complete lunatics. They're going along with this and they think this is, you know, this is the best thing that's ever happened. And can you imagine, you know, if the lights don't turn on or if the heat doesn't work in your home and you have a bunch of these people?
God, I'm thinking of the soy jack, the meme of the soy boy thing. I mean, they're going to be absolutely... Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, it's fine.
It just occurred to me as you were talking. Can you imagine them, you know, like with their mouths hanging open and everything? If the luxury goes away, you know, that's a guy who seems to have been fashioned for an age of luxury and automation, because he could not possibly survive in any other age.
He wouldn't exist. That's the thing. He wouldn't exist. It's a rarity of the modern age, and it's not a good one. So, you know, if it's just being honest here, but I mean, if that turns out to not be the most successful survival strategy, oh well.
You know, it's, it is what it is. Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, this has been a roller coaster conversation. We've covered so many things, but yeah, I think it's nice to speak to you because you seem to be aware of the challenges and possible challenges that lie ahead, and yet you seem to be sort of looking forward to it almost.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'll regret that when when we're there, but you know, we'll see. Something needs to change and something needs to end, and I'm afraid that if the comfort continues, there is no incentive for people to change, and they will just be going deeper and deeper into that, whether you call that an illusion, or maybe, you know, down the road there will be augmented reality or virtual reality or something, you know, where you won't even, you know, your body won't even experience anything. You just lie in some sensory pod somewhere, who knows, right? And so we have to have some tough love. And that's nature, and us getting back to basics. We've developed, allegedly, in a specific way for, well, at least tens of thousands of years, not hundreds of thousands of years, depending on how long you argue that the, you know, modern humans have been around. But we've done largely the same thing over and over again, an incredible repetition. If you look into like the archaeological record of how we lived and what we did, and then eventually something happens. We don't know what, but it just creativity, you could argue, something happens, just an explosion of new innovative things, right? Fire and tools and all these things. And this is just, you know, progress and stuff. And I'm not against that, but by any means, I think this part of us as well, you know, the drive, the spirit to invent new things, the spirit to try to improve things or whatnot. But in a sense, we've also been captured by that. We're, you know, the progress in and of itself is the end, I guess. It's not just a means to do something or to develop something. And I think we've kind of just been lost in that. And we're living through, I think, the culmination of that period right now, where there's literally like we have more at our disposal than ever, but like there's fewer people with purpose or any sense of direction than ever as well. On top of that, and so again, I think the only thing that's going to smack us back into place is nature in these circumstances. So the thing I'm kind of struggling with a little bit right now when thinking about all these things is like, so is that natural, or are these conditions being created for us? You know what I mean? By people who like, haha, we're gonna take you out, or we're gonna try to kill off as many people as possible, right? Because there's this convergence of issues where you have, I mean, think about it. You know, personally, I think that the COVID vaccination scheme has been, utterly horrendous. And I think we're far from seeing the full consequences of that yet. This might be years to come, maybe even decades. Maybe there's long-term fertility. We don't even know, right? And they're doing it towards the kids now, and it's completely absurd, right? But then you have food shortages. You have energy shortages. You have all these other kinds of problems, which means you could see a disaster down the road potentially happening. And so I'm not trying to argue, just if anybody is thinking about that out there, say, well, that those conditions were created for us. It was done by, you know, evil people that want us gone, essentially, and that's a good thing. That is very hard. I'm not taking that position of saying like, oh, therefore it's great. But regardless, it's almost like that those circumstances, even if they're being guided by people, is there's still a higher purpose, I guess, that you can see behind that. I think we, as a civilization, we have definitely lost our way. And if tough love is the way for us to get out of it, so be it, no matter in what shape it comes, no matter who's pulling the strings of that, no matter how intentional that is. I think the tragedy would be to just continue to go deeper and deeper into this materialistic comfort and that illusion of sorts. As opposed to actually breaking free of that and getting a course correction along the way. I hope it'll be a positive course correction, and it's too early to tell. But again, I go back to that point. I think what people have to do is begin to preparing themselves accordingly, mentally, and just know that things might not be the same within 5 years from now. It might be radically different. Hopefully it's not so drastic that we're seeing, you know, casualties among our people, and it's just utter disaster and stuff. But I still think it's something that we have to just kind of at least contemplate and think that that is a possibility. If we don't go down that road, sure, that you know, good, then we can do something else. But surely, I mean, Wolves, we can't, the way we've done things the last few decades here, 30 years or so, I don't know anybody who would want to just see that continue and just getting deeper and deeper in this. Something's got to shake us up. Something's got to like pull us out of this. And if this is the mechanism that does it, so be it. You know what I mean? It's above my decision-making process, and I have nothing to do with it. But if it's here, and if it's something we can take advantage of, and if something, you know, something very negative that we can spin into something positive, then I think that's the best course of action here. It's basically to try to see the positive in something very, very dark, and using that opportunity and causing our people to pull ourselves together again. You know what I mean? And actually like try to snap out of this and do something which is actually going to mean something, and lay the bricks and the foundation of something now that can actually stand within a few decades from now, or maybe even a few generations down the line. Because I don't see anything we're doing now is just utter garbage, collectively speaking, as a civilization. And there's not much value in any of it. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think an important aspect of all this to bear in mind is every man will have his own skills and his own way of being useful to the people around him, to his community, and to himself. And there will be things that he probably has to rely on other people for. So it's not like every guy has to be the Ubermensch who can build his own house and do everything. But either way, this is going to be an opportunity for people to do a lot of things for themselves, to learn a lot of new skills, to learn a sense of agency that we don't have today, our parents didn't have, and even our grandparents didn't have, and maybe even beyond that. So this is really an opportunity for people to have a life that's far more real and rewarding than the life that we have just now. I mean, yeah. The life of just sitting and watching stuff online and vegetating and hoping for something to arrive one day and make life meaningful. So I agree with you that basically struggle seems to be, unfortunately, a necessary thing in order for people to have meaningful lives.
Oh, yeah.
And we have not had struggle in too long, in far too long. And I think that as much as it's scary, and I will freely admit that this prospect does not fill me with delight. I am scared.
Me neither. No.
But as much as that, I am, it also does make me think, okay, well, what do you want then? If you don't want if you don't want a chance to self-actualize, to use trendy phrases, then, well, what do you want? This surely is what life is all about.
It will never be a good time for it, technically, right? Because we just need to do this and or whatever. You know, if it happens, it happens. It's outside of our control. What we do in those circumstances, that's what matters, right? How we use that to our advantage, and that's always what it's been about. Like life, I mean, adaptability, being dynamic and using opportunities or even disaster at times that do strike to your advantage and making something good out of that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And I think, again, for men, this is a key thing. It should be, at least. The idea of the guy, and I'm not denigrating anyone who has a job like this or a career like this, but the idea of a guy who joins a company and then works for that company all of his life and then retires, that's a sort of boomer, mid-20th century ideal. But it's never, I mean, it's not natural. I mean, a lifestyle that plugs far more into the male psyche is one in which you do things for yourself and you work for yourself and you don't have that security of a job for life with the corporation. I mean, and again, I don't want to denigrate it. And if that is the job that you have, good for you, whatever. But I think that we should look at this possible future that I think is probably coming as an opportunity to have more agency, to have more of a sense of ourselves and more power. I mean, power is is really what it's all about. It's either you have power or someone else has power over you. And obviously, it's always going to be a balance, but you want the balance to be as much in your own favor as possible, because otherwise, you're going to get abused. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. And children, just think of that, how our society has, again, it's been so comfortable. We've built out of that comfort. We've been, you know, in a sense that the modern lifestyle, that children have been a nuisance in that. Personally, I don't think so, but I can see it that a lot of people are like, well, it's expensive and it's difficult and both parents have to work. And you know what I mean? Like all these things around it, which makes it just that much more hard and difficult. If you think back to like early, I mean, ever since the, you know, Yamnaya period, the Aryan invasion, as some call it, the Indo-European era of like the new farmers type of Indo-European showing up or whatever, we've wanted large families, we've needed more people, you wanted to have more children, the better kind of thing, and now we're at a point where like what we struck, was it 8 billion or was it 9 billion recently, I forget what it is, right, where like every system is just like maxed out, and like the crop yields are as pushed to the brim, and it's like just barely that we can like make it, and it's like there's nowhere for the system to keep going up. You know, it's only down from here. There's no other way. It's, I see it anyway. Barring like, oh, all of a sudden we go interplanetary and we find new, whatever. But I mean, that's at this point, that's a pipe dream. And it's just not going to happen. You know, we're aiming for like diversity quotas as opposed to like scientific discovery and working on space programs and you know, things like that anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But yeah, so, I mean, it's just back to basics. That's, I guess, what I'm saying. Like, I think we're about to find out of what it means to go back to basics. And that could be a wonderful, wonderful thing, because I think we'll start getting in touch with something that we fundamentally has lost as Europeans, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's, as I say, self-agency and self-actualization, power, autonomy, independence, being able to do things for yourself.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that they don't ever teach you at school. And it's, that's significant. That this is the stuff they should have been teaching. But they didn't, because they were training you instead for a life, for a world that required you to be very docile. And that world is now probably going to evaporate. Or, well, you might well be given a binary choice. As Henrik said earlier, you can either join this smart city and live in the pod and whatever, or you can be outside of that, in which case the life will be tougher. But I think it will be a lot more rewarding.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that optimistic note, let's wrap this one up. And we've been going for nearly an hour, actually. It's flown by. I'm surprised.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Okay. It's something to talk about, isn't it?
It certainly is. Let's. There are a few super chats. Greetings. This is from Raven Keys. Greetings, Woz and Henrik. Merry Yule. I'm enjoying this year's millennial. Good lineup so far. Glad you had Peter Canones on. Take care. Well, thank you very much. Chain Reaction says, Hail Henrik and fam. Hail Wozy. Also, today we remember the Akko incident where 47 warriors chose death over dishonor. Kanpai. All right. Thank you very much. Remnant Posting. Nice to see you here. One trick they pulled in America was using different, this is about COVID, using different testing criteria for vaccinated and unvaccinated people. Unvaxxed were given tests with a higher cycle threshold, making the test more sensitive and producing more positives among the unvaxxed. More fake positives equals more deaths and hospitalizations. Yes, that's the kind of thing that I was talking about earlier, but it wasn't coming to mind in memory. But they had all of these ridiculous, shameless, deceitful tricks for getting the data that they wanted in order to push the message that they wanted. It was absolutely dreadful.
And that means it's a lot of people along the supply chain, so to speak, of who made this possible that are 100% aware of this. You know what I mean? Like, because you don't Like, oh, you're vaccinated. Okay, then we'll do a higher cycle threshold for you. You know, like there's this just, or test for the vaccinated. Here's another test for the, no matter how you slice it, someone knows like, okay, treat them, this group differently than them or than this group. And that makes it, you know, a lot of people were like just part of this. You know what I mean? Following order.
Yeah, the scale of the corruption is just mind-boggling. We have no idea of all the tricks and procedures and protocols that must have been adhered to in order to make this happen.
Yeah.
All of this. It's frightening because it means you don't live in the society you thought you lived in. You can't trust the healthcare system. You can't trust the scientific establishment. You can't trust academia. You can't trust the government. You can't trust the media. Not that I was under any illusions about that beforehand. But the point is, it was a real wake-up call for a lot of people.
The most horrible. Can you imagine? Like, I mean, I saw some of the stories. I know we're winding down, but it's just a real quick mention. I saw some of the stories of these, the children that had these, whether it was heart complications or they had to have a blood transfusion or something like that. And there was a battle that parents had over if they could use blood that was from non-vaccinated people as opposed to vaccinated people. And I saw stories about how kids who had, whether it was a heart transplant or a blood transfusion, had gotten the state fought them on this and say, no, you have to have blood from vaccinated people. And these kids, 2-year-olds, I think was the latest one I read about, that died from a massive blood clot that extended from the, I think from the head down to like the one of the feet or something like that. Like absurd.
God almighty, I haven't heard of this. That's incredible. I heard of the child in New Zealand.
New Zealand was another one. Yeah.
And the state has taken that child away from his parents now
because
they were refusing. I mean, it's scary. It really is frightening.
Talk about finding out the hard way. That's what I'm saying. Like the sacrifice of finding out that these are evil people that like, no, they really want you dead. You know what I mean? They want you dead. They want your kids dead. They want you destitute. And if you're not dead, they want you homeless and like in misery. You know what I mean?
Yes. I mean, and they're prepared to do anything in order to make an ideological point. They're prepared to take a child away from his parents.
Yeah.
I mean, this is monstrous. Absolutely. And, you know, I can hardly talk about Jacinda Ardern without Fed posting. Let's just say she's not the nicest woman. And then some random bloke said, speaking of relaxing natural selection, predictions are there will be 4.5 billion Africans in Africa alone by 2100. Child mortality is very low in Africa now. Dysgenics on steroids.
That's before I realized what bad state they're in when it comes to their food supply, and that the phosphate, ammonia, what is all the different petros, in some cases they're petrochemically derived, such as the Haber process to create these kinds of fertilizers and stuff like that. But that whole international, those resources are like all of that, the whole supply chain for this up in the air. And many African countries are so dependent on some of these already, barring, of course, and I'll say this, barring them all just fleeing Africa and obviously going to the West, to go to the Northern Hemisphere, barring that, we might see a complete famine in some of these countries within a couple of years, partially because of mismanagement, but also because of like the dependency that they have on the Western mechanism. So consequently, if we have supply chain issues and breakdowns in the West, and even the COVID thing, let's think people then beginning to die off on massive scale. That means people not showing up for work. People not showing up for work means no one is there to fulfill those jobs, which means utter collapse of most industries in one way or another, right? So it's like none is spared. This is a global system. It's a very thin chain that's like linked together, and all it takes is one of those weakest links to break, and the whole chain might come apart. We saw this in the collapse of the Bronze Age. It's probably the only historical parallel that we have, but it's so different today. But the point is, you have one of these links break, the whole damn thing goes down, and that's possibly what could happen here.
All right. The trouble is, if there is famine in Africa, the solution will be for them to come up to Europe.
They might not even have the it might not be able to, like, physically.
Yeah, I understand. You're saying that
place to even do it. You know what I mean? Whether they're going to start walking. You know what I mean? It's like you got to have food on the way. Like, there's all these, you know, different scenarios. That's almost. I'm saying it just as a note to those who say, well, you know, all of us in the West are going to die, but we're going to be flooded by Africans. I'm saying they have plenty of challenges on their own already. You know what I mean? And they might not make that. If we go, the point is, too, if the West goes down, they go down as well, you know?
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah, indeed. Okay, then finally, sort of lightweight sort of question that I'm sure you've been asked 1,000 times, but I'm not actually sure what the answer is. What made you decide on the name Red Ice?
It was kind of a beginning. We did an art website. We did graphics, we did music, and all kinds of things. And I was thinking about the creation process. So I borrowed something that was kind of part of North mythology, but it's part of other traditions as well. It was creation, hot, cold, warm. Warm, cold, light, dark, you know, that kind of thing. Red being fire, ice obviously being, you know, cold, blue, stuff like that. There's a story in Norse mythology called the Ginnungagap, right, where you have essentially the void, essentially, but then you have two forces that come into play, and it's in the balance, the perfect balance between these two extreme forces that you have the conditions for life being created. So that's kind of a short version of a very long story of why we picked the name.
All right, excellent. That's lovely, actually. I like that concept. Okay, well, Henrik from Red Ice, thank you for appearing on Millennial 8. All right, I will be back tomorrow night. Let me see who's on tomorrow night. Let me see. Martin Selner, Garode Murphy, Ricardo Deshaney, and then Semi Ogog. So that will be an interesting lineup there. Hope you've enjoyed this. Henrik, thank you for agreeing to appear. I will see you all tomorrow. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Get the info you need at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation today. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show and spread the word.